Hello and welcome to Science Unscripted. It's Connor here.
And Gabe, and we're back, and you're shaking. With the anticipation and excitement of coming back to work after a month's vacation. I can feel you just walked in the door.
Oh, I just landed in Germany, really. So, 9 p.m. last night in Frankfurt, and then...
And you probably had a great night's sleep, and now you're coming into
jet lags. I jogged in. That was my little trick, my little hack. I jogged in to wake this organism of mine back up. Uh-huh. It's working right now. I'm firing on... I was going to say all cylinders, some cylinders.
Some of those.
And they're going to run out
cylinders.
Of gas at like noon, but we're good for now. So, yeah.
How was your trip?
Great. What?
Home.
Yeah, home. Actually, when you say that, what do I first think of? It's that my kids fell in love with the sport of baseball this summer.
Oh.
And I guess I associate that with the word home.
Yeah.
And so had a lot of time with the kids, played a lot of baseball. Saw tons of family and friends. Saw my grandpa a couple times. That was important to me.
Yeah.
Saw some live music. Nine Inch Nails. That was pretty cool. Yeah. Great summer.
Okay.
Home. How was your trip?
I too was home.
And by the way, I should just jump in here and say we both just walked in. I mean, we saw each other for the first time after 5 weeks. What? 15 minutes ago? 20 minutes
Not
ago?
Even.
Yeah,
Not
so
even.
Yeah. So I don't. I don't know.
I had time
anything.
To use the bathroom, and that's pretty much all I've done since yeah. seeing you.
Well, and we don't message each other on vacation.
Oh, no. You think I'm crazy?
I think we're more than colleagues. We're friends. And yet, we've said this to each other a lot. We spend roughly 40 hours a week with each other every single week.
Right.
It's probably healthy to go radio silent.
No, in order to maintain a good work-life balance, I can't write to you. Because otherwise, my whole life then would be...
About
you.
Yeah. I thought about you a couple times, more than a couple times. But anyway, how was your vacation?
Well, home. You said it already. I was with my parents and my brother, and we were all together with my family as well, living in my parents' house. I jammed with my brother. He's in a jam band, Grateful Dead cover band. We had a bunch of like concerts together.
A bunch of?
Like three or four. One of them was on a random Saturday. In back of an auto parts store, O'Reilly Auto Parts happened to invite my brother's band to play behind their store. The sun was shining. It's just in a random field. The drummer drove his drum set on the trailer on the back of his truck, set the drums up, set the amps up with a generator, and it was a concert.
That sounds amazing.
Yeah.
Not part of a concert series? Your brother knew the auto parts guy, or is this part of a...
The auto parts guy just knew the drummer and said, hey, you guys want to play on Saturday? Yeah, why not?
Wow.
That was it. And then people who were buying auto parts at O'Reilly's store were like, what's going on behind your store, O'Reilly? Let's go check it out. And it was me and my brother and the band just jamming. And it's the kind of music, it's not covers where, oh, I know that song, cool. It's a song, the song can either go on 5 minutes or 20 minutes, just depending on the creative ideas or the improv. If it works, you just keep playing. If it doesn't, you stop. And there were some songs that just went on and on and on, and people were there just grooving and dancing.
So they come in for like a carburetor or like a windshield wiper.
Yeah, or a spark plug. Yeah, sure.
Or a spark plug.
Why not?
And then they go around back.
And get a 20-minute jam out of it.
Like Jerry Garcia memory sort of thing.
Yeah.
How cool.
Yeah.
I don't know what else to say. That's awesome.
Yeah. No, that was... There a bunch of other stuff happens on vacation, but I can't think of it now. That was with the big memories that jumped out at me.
Yeah. I'm not sure I have memories right now because of the jet lag. Like I'm looking through the fog of flight.
Are you still kind of there? It took me a while. I've been home for about a week now.
Yeah.
And for the first few days, there were flashes where because you get so immersed when you go on vacation and you go to your home, you get completely immersed there and you're there.
Yeah.
You're there as if you live there forever. And then whoop, you fly back home and you're in this other home in Germany here. Which isn't really home. I'll be honest.
Yeah,
this will never be home for me.
Yeah, I agree with that.
And I'm here, but I'm still there.
Yeah.
Like where am I?
Yeah. No, this is also a factor of just exhaustion and flying in planes and getting routed through Helsinki, which is possibly my favorite airport in the world. It's way too big and spacious and light for the amount of people in there. Yeah. And then you land in Frankfurt. And the for all of you coming to Germany at some point, you'll probably go through Frankfurt. The international baggage claim section smells worse than it's urine. I don't know what's going on with the plumbing down there. Mm-hmm. I've been to a lot of bus stops. I've been to a lot of beer garden pissoirs. This mm-hmm. is worse. Yeah, this is worse. Fix it, please. Frankfurt, fix this. This is a horrible first impression. And then you walk outside and you have to, you know, catch the bus to get to... you have to do all this stuff. And then all this cigarette smoke.
Yeah.
A garbage sign or a sign for the garbage can. It says Müll in German. I didn't even like seeing that word.
Yeah.
I reacted negatively to the German word. I think, again, that's a factor of, yeah, fatigue, part of it. And over when you're exhausted, smells, sensory overload everywhere.
Yeah.
But it was hard to get used to again. After 5 weeks, like the reverse culture shock going back to the U.S. Yeah. And then the reverse culture shock come back to this home.
Yeah.
Which is a home. I mean, I eat bread rolls today, and boy, I feasted on those things. I missed those.
Yeah.
I missed the German bread.
No, when I left 15, 20 years, I can't even remember when it was, 20 years ago now, I was excited about something new. Now when I come back here, the excitement has waned to such an extent. I'm looking around. It's funny you mentioned the baggage claim. I was standing at the baggage claim, looking around at what felt like aliens. These Germans.
Our German studio technician is giving us a stern look through the glass here. Like, what are you talking about us like that? I feel you.
Back,
yeah, we're in the getting back used to it process. Yeah. We haven't quite arrived. And that's fine. Yeah. That's good. We're getting back into it, back into the flow. It's I haven't had a chance to even look at emails. I'm sure there are a bunch of emails that have come in.
Yeah.
We'll get to those in a sec. But yeah, Gabe, good to be back. Good to see you.
Yeah, it really is. It really is. And we will be back in a second. Let's take a music break first.
Science Unscripted.
So as we get back into the science here, just one qualification or one thing I'd like to say in reference to what we just talked about. That Frankfurt airport, or at least the international arrivals or baggage section, which smelled so terrible. To be clear, it's a horrible first impression. I just want to say Germany itself is pretty great. But in the same way, like if you walked into a phenomenal house of someone you're visiting and sewage was coming out the front door, that would make a bad first impression. That's what I meant there.
It's so unnecessary because the house really is nice. Why not just clean up the entrance?
That one, yeah. And I'm going to kind of connect to something like sewage in just a few minutes.
Ooh.
But first, emails. And okay. I'm going to start with a very nice one from Phil Thompson. He's written us numerous times before. Some of the most memorable emails we've ever received. We've turned one of them, a poem, into a song.
He's a poet. Yeah.
We kind of reference that every single time we read something by him. Anyway, he was writing in reference to an episode that we re-aired that was connected to grip strength or falling. Gabe, that was science that you talked about on that episode.
Yeah, those were scientists looking into when old people fall. And I won't get into all the details, but it's primarily in the house on level ground, essentially.
And not where you would expect, like stairs.
No stairs or anything like that. Not climbing or walking outside, inside the house. And at weird, about 3 p.m. during the day, in the middle of the afternoon, in the house. That's when it happens.
So not the image you have in mind of middle of the night, heading downstairs to use the restroom, bam.
No,
it's not that. So one of the things we discussed kind of on the side of that is the idea of grip strength used as a barometer of someone's overall muscular or skeletal health, and how your grip strength really can have a surprising effect on longevity, on how long you're going to live, And that there's a strong correlation, and that the speculation or suspicion is that it's possible that if you can grip things well,
yeah,
then you might be able to better catch yourself from falling in certain scenarios.
That was a reference you took from a book you had read, Peter Attila?
Yeah, Peter Attila. I think the book is called Longevity. It's worth a read. In any case, they correlate. You can say that much. And Phil's email here says, love the show about grip strength and falling for seniors. I've been shopping for groceries with two bags, one in each hand, for 20 years. So we're talking four bags here. Never use carts with wheels. This habit keeps grip strength strong and also forces me to buy only what I need instead of filling up a cart with useless, heavy products. With grocery prices skyrocketing, this practice has also proven beneficial economically. Thanks for replaying your best shows. And that's from Phil there with a great tip. Something anyone can do to keep their arms strong and their pocketbook or their wallet heavy.
Yeah. It goes to an exercise known as the farmer's walk, where you take heavy dumbbells, one in each hand, and that's all you do. You just walk. See how long you can walk with that weight in each hand, and then try and do more reps. Go for longer until you get forearms that are strong enough to keep you alive forever.
Yeah. And the other quick tip here, one that I am doing now, is just hanging from things. If there's a bar, like a monkey bar, as we called them at the outdoor jungle gyms, or I've heard some people talk about doing it like on the underside of a stairwell, if that makes sense. You just hold on. Could be 15 seconds, 30 seconds, 45 seconds. Do that a couple times and you can make your arms a lot stronger.
Dead hangs, absolutely.
Yeah.
Should I read one from Clank?
Yeah. Clank, I read that too, and Clank is his name?
Clank is his name. This is somebody who has had a transplant. His life partner, somebody who's been with for over 20 years, 23 years, I think, gave him a kidney a few months back, or at the end of last year. And he wrote to us initially about that transplant, but also with regard to diabetes, because apparently he's also a type 1 diabetic, and he's on a donor's list for islet cells in his pancreas. Those are the cells that produce insulin that type 1 diabetics do not have. And he wrote to us and said he was waiting for those cells, but also that because of the immunosuppressants that he was on for the kidney, that islet cell transplant would also be possible for him, because you are already on immunosuppressants if you've had a transplant, and that makes you makes it available for you.
And just to take a step back, I think most people are probably aware of this. I feel like I know it mostly because of you, but this solves the original problem, right? Because the insulin producing cells in your body, if you have type 1 diabetes, have been attacked and killed by your own immune system. It's an autoimmune disorder.
For whatever reason. We don't know exactly why, but my immune system decided one day back in 2001, in the late summer of 2001, to attack my own cells in the pancreas, the ones that produce the insulin. I don't know why they did. Right, they just did.
Right after a viral infection?
Yeah. And now I don't have insulin because I don't have those cells.
And so
all I need to cure diabetes would be those cells. And they don't regrow. So all you need is a transplant of those cells. And what Clank is writing in about right now, the reason why he's writing in right now, is that there was a study out of Sweden where for the first time ever, a transplant has successfully happened where those cells have been transplanted and the body didn't kill them off. They weren't rejected by the body.
How did they do that?
Because they were gene edited. We've mentioned the fancy term CRISPR-Cas9 before, how you can literally doctor and cut out different parts of the genes of cells to make them a certain way. These islet cells that were transplanted in this 42-year-old man in the study in Sweden were doctored in a certain way that the body didn't reject them.
I was just going to say.
The antigens were taken out of the cells. Remember during COVID, we talked about antigens, the things that promote or cause antibodies to cause your immune system to create antibodies and kill it off. Mm-hmm. Those antigens were taken out of these islet cells and put into this 42-year-old man's pancreas. And 12 weeks after that operation, the cells were still there. His body didn't kill those cells off. And he wasn't taking insulin. So he wasn't injecting himself with insulin. And his blood sugar was fine, which means those islet cells are working. They're producing insulin in him. And his body didn't kill them off.
Let me just make sure I followed you. they've doctored them. How exactly they've taken these. Let me put it this way. What I would have assumed is you would have these insulin producing cells.
Yeah.
And that somewhere there'd be like a docking point that would allow your immune system to target and kill those cells.
Yes.
And that they would kind of block that docking point.
Yes. But before they were put into my body, genetic material in those cells was taken out, which produces these antigens.
Gotcha.
So it's like they had the hostile part taken out of them.
Gotcha.
So when they go into my pancreas, into my body, my immune system's like, that, fine. We don't care about those cells. Those aren't invader cells that our T cells have to go and kill off.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
They're fine.
I follow you.
So now they're in my pancreas making insulin. My blood sugar stays down and it's all good. That is the cure. I've been listening to people talk for 25 years. The cure's around the corner. The cure's around the corner. They were telling me that at Yale right when I got diabetes. Oh, it's going to be cured. No matter, they're doing transplant. They're going to cure it. That was, I've stopped listening to that crap until now listening to this. This is, we're there. All we need now is more cells, because in this case in Sweden, this operation in Sweden was done after a man had died. The cells were taken out of his pancreas and put into this 42-year-old man's pancreas. So there's a limited number of them. There are operations that have been done, treatments that have been done using stem cells. That's way more complicated than donor islet cells from somebody who has just died. So right now we just need cells, and we need people, more doctors who know how to use this technology. There's a very limited number of companies around the world who know how to use CRISPR-Cas9 gene editing techniques. So once there are enough doctors who know how to do it and more cells, then type 1 diabetes is going to be a thing of the past.
That would be.
And other chronic diseases like it.
That would be amazing.
Because now you don't need immunosuppressants. You don't need to shut off the immune system, which is extremely dangerous.
Right. We've talked about that before.
Yeah.
In particular, with regard to the fifth ever patient cured of HIV, and how in curing him, Mark, he came close to death as a result of dialing down his immune system.
But thank you, Clank, for getting in touch.
Yeah. I'm going to talk, I kind of foreshadowed this with the sewage.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm going to be very vague here at the top, because I think I'm going to talk about a quote-unquote news story based on quote-unquote reports, and I could never trace them back to anywhere. So it's kind of a bogus story that got some attention, not really from mainstream news media outlets, but enough attention that it came across my feeds in a couple different ways. And this was the idea that during a recent visit to Alaska, the Russian President Vladimir Putin had amongst his security staff somebody who was responsible for taking his bowel movements out of Alaska and back to Russia.
All of Mr. Putin's.
Yes. And then the very next thing I think that is important to say here is I'm not convinced this story is true.
Okay.
There have been reports in the past about this being a tactic used in particular during the Cold War, to assess whether a foreign adversary leader's health was good, bad, or somewhere in the middle, and that you could do this by looking at their stool samples.
Uh-huh.
This is within the realm of possibilities. What I'm kind of suspicious of, or what I'm just going to say out loud here, is this could be entirely fabricated so that you, the listener right now, have an association between a person and fecalia.
Fecal matter.
Yeah, and that you can't really undo that psychologically. If you take any, let me just switch and take any person in the world, like a figure skater, a professional athlete, and then I say something that forces you to associate them with human excrement. I don't know if I can even undo that after the fact. That association stinks. It's there. So
nice.
Take all of this with a big grain of salt. But what it caused me to actually think of is, well, what could you tell? What would be the reason for doing that? Because there are security analysts amongst the various comments all over the web who've said, no, as part of training, you know, I've received trainings from former CIA agents or current CIA agents. This is a thing. And it's not just top level leaders.
Okay.
Where you take this stuff back out.
So what could I find out if I've got a sample of someone's feces?
Yes, that's the question. And I'll go through a couple of the answers here. One is whether there are any parasites in their body. Mm-hmm. I mean, that seems kind of wild, but a lot of the human population on planet Earth
has parasites in their bodies right now or has had them in the past. Some of these, I'm going to try to pronounce them. Trichinella comes from undercooked pork. Giardia is an infection that happens when you've come into contact with contaminated foods or soils. Again, tainted by the feces of an infected carrier. You can get various worms, hookworms, pinworms. What are the clues that you listening might have something like this? If you have a lot of diarrhea or cramping or gas, that would be, yeah, one reason to think, well, this might be me.
Okay, parasites. What's
parasites.
Next?
Parasites. Next one. Basically, gluten intolerance, celiac disease. And this is just that your body cannot process gluten or rye. 1% of the human population has this. This is 1% has led to most of us being familiar with somebody who either has it or believes they have it, or going to a restaurant or a cafe and seeing that they offer various gluten-free products.
No, I know a couple of people.
Yeah. Yeah. This is a big one. And then another one called, if I'm pronouncing it correctly, steatorrhea. And this would be, talk about difficult imagery, but if you look down into the toilet afterwards and it seems fatty, it would be an indication that your intestines are not able to absorb fats. In particular, they're fat-soluble vitamins, A, D, and K. This would be an indication that you might have a pancreatic or intestinal disorder. Mm-hmm. So again, if you didn't know any differently, if you're just looking at the feces, this would be an indication that there's an issue going on. And then the big one is really, and I think most of our listeners are probably aware of this, blood. It's very hemoglobin. It's very easy to detect blood in the stool. And this could be a couple of different things. The most common, because frankly, most people are going to get freaked out if this happens, because they're immediately going to think I have
cancer,
colorectal cancer.
Yeah.
The most common reason for having blood in your stool is a hemorrhoid. So this is just a swollen vein in your anus or in your lower intestines.
Mm-hmm.
Could be an ulcer. This is a bacterial infection in your stomach. I think you were talking about ulcers last 1 year ago, Gabe.
Yeah, I had them.
But then again, colon cancer could be colon cancer as well. And this is obviously the case. If there's any indication that you have blood in your stool at all, to go talk to your doctor, could result in either a colonoscopy, meaning somebody's basically looking inside your lower intestine, inside your rectum for polyps or any cancerous tumor growths. And then the other options are just a stool sample that's sent off somewhere to analyze it, either for blood, mm-hmm. first and foremost, if you have a suspicion that could be something, might not. Or secondly, for DNA that might indicate that you have some sort of cancerous growth in there. And I guess that's more or less where I'm going to leave this for now.
Mm-hmm.
It obviously started with this political dimension, whether leaders around the world, but I think for most people out there listening right now, that's in the world of like spy movies, John Le Carré and things like that. Like none of us are really involved in that. A lot of us will have to worry in our lifetimes about colorectal cancer and what to do if we think we might have it. I know that Gabe, you and I haven't quite reached that age threshold here in Germany. In Germany, it's age 50.
We're not far off, yeah.
Yeah, at age 50, every 10 years, you get a free colonoscopy, if you want to put it that way. Every 2 years, you have right to a kit to test for blood in your stool or DNA malfunctions. Mm. And that would be a test that you would do if you had no suspicions at all, just every 2 years. And obviously, if you have someone in your family who has had colorectal cancer, then that number moves upward. In some countries, it's 10 years younger than the age at which that person developed a cancer. It's different in every country, but something for all of you to pay attention to. Again, a very common, prevalent cancer, and can get very dangerous quickly because many people have no idea that they have it when they have it.
All right. Thank you, Connor.
Hmm?
That was sound information and a little political.
Well, I want to, yeah, thank you. I'm trying to dial that back because I think it's important for people out there to be aware of how propaganda works. And in this case, what I mean is if you take any person and associate them with something disgusting, it's difficult to undo that disgust, even if your brain learns it's false later.
Got it.
So just keep that in mind. Be skeptical.
I'm going to go a little political real quick before we go. There was one thing I saw when I was at home, and I just want to mention this. My brother's wife, her best friend is a Democrat, and her husband is in the lower house of the Wisconsin State Legislature, the Wisconsin State Assembly, as a Republican. And then I saw this study out of Wellesley College in Massachusetts looking into How many politically diverse friendships are out there in the United States right now? And the way that it was done and the results I just found are really interesting. Let me make this quick. She went to public spaces on the East Coast and just saw pairs coming at her and asked them, what's your political orientation? Are you Democrat? Are you Republican? And of all the 542 pairs that she saw there and also another 434 that she got online, between 3% and 8% of those pairs were politically diverse. So one was a Republican, one was a Democrat. I mean, I know that politics in the United States is divisive and polarized, but wow.
Yeah. And that's
3 out of every 100 politically diverse. So that's just one thing that it's almost shockingly uncommon. But she was also looking, this researcher was also looking into what it does for the relationship and what it does for your openness or how you see the world. And really quick, if you were politically diverse, that means if it was a Republican and a Democrat, the relationship was worse. And I guess that's understandable. There's a lot of tension. There was a lower quality of relationship, but you had a much greater openness to people with other beliefs.
So yeah, that has to be
either
true.
Someone of a different political orientation or sexual orientation or minority groups or what have you. It opens your mind to other kinds of people, makes your relationship less good, and it's incredibly uncommon right now. That's all I wanted to say at the end here.
Yeah, this will remind some of our listeners out there of a recent study we talked about on how...
Out of the UK, right?
Out of the UK,
yeah.
On how all of the memes that we've been coming across, all the divisive posts and hot takes are pushing us further apart, and that can have a negative impact on relationships. Yeah. The reason I bring it up here is that one of the speculative ideas within that paper, right down in the conclusion, was that one caveat or one weakness of this research is that the people who are politically different and together may have had no other choice. There's no other way to put it. It's like whether due to circumstance, where you're living, whom you're in contact with or not, that, this is my best option or my least worst option. And that could affect the survival rate of those relationships. Again, a very different study. But one thing to kind of think about here as well. But here it's a positive.
Yeah, this one here is examining the frequency and characteristics of politically diverse friendships in the journal Social, Psychological, and Personality Science. It's cross-sectional. It's not longitudinal. It doesn't mean it's causing it. The polarization of politics is causing this, but the impact has already been had.
Yeah.
It's there. Anything to say, guys, about that or really anything we've talked about here?
SU@dw.com. We are back in action, full time, all the time, motors churning, firing the pistons. There were a lot of emails that came in over the summer and that we obviously weren't able to respond to. One I'll mention is from Elizabeth, also about balance. And saying that she is doing something called purposeful walking, about stride and where you place your feet. And she says that this has improved her balance. Another way to just increase longevity, make your lives longer. But again, yeah, send us your emails. We'll do our best to get back to you. We'll read a couple of them on the air.
Yeah. Really glad to be back. Here we go.
DW, made for Minds.